that's included everything or just
page 410. Last week,
still in here, it's right.
Yeah. Last week we gave a whole introduction to the concept of Zochas Hima Shabbos L'Katshei. We discussed basically at great length, but in a nutshell, that during the week Hashem created. So when we create, we connect ourselves to that level of Hashem, which is Creator. When a person on Shabbos, Hashem stopped creating, meaning Hashem elevated Himself to a level higher than Creator. So then, when we stopped creating, we associate ourselves with the level of Hashem, which is higher than Creator. And therefore, the 6 days of the week are called Elokim, and because Bereishis is Bara Elokim, Elokim is a level of creation. Shabbos LaHashem, Shabbos is a level of Yudkei Vavkei, so it's much greater. Now, continuing with the concept of Zochas Hima Shabbos L'Katshei.
I have a question.
What?
In Pasuk Yud Aleph, it says, Kisheshes Yamim Asa Hashem.
We're not there yet, yeah.
So, if we're not there, we're not there. So.
Right, we're not there yet. But it's a good question. I'm hoping by the time we get to you, you'll forget the question. Okay, now we know what it says in L'Chadaydi. Zachar v'shamar b'dibar achod. Zachar and Shamar, Hashem said together, simultaneously. In Parshas V'eschanan, when the Ten Commandments are repeated, so at this one of Shabbos, it says, Zachar Esyem HaShabbos L'Katshei. Over there it says, Shamar Esyem HaShabbos L'Katshei. Remember the day, guard the day of Shabbos to keep it holy. Here it says, remember the day of Shabbos to keep it holy. And Chazal say that when Hashem said the Ten Commandments, He simultaneously, B'dibur Echad, He said Zachar and Shomer, which is a human impossibility to say two words at exactly the same time. And the Jews heard Mamish two words together at the same time. What's the difference between Zachar and Shomer? And for that matter, the Klei Yakar elaborates over a very, very long Klei Yakar, but he goes through like 8 to 10 differences in the wording of this Shabbos commandment and the Shabbos commandment in V'eschanan. And some of them we'll touch upon because he goes through one general nekuda, one general difference of the two. But anyway, what's the difference halachically between Zachar and Shomer? Zachar means to remember Shabbos. How do you remember Shabbos? So the Gemara learns out that the concept of remembering Shabbos L'Katshei to sanctify it means you have to sanctify Shabbos when it starts and you have to sanctify Shabbos when it ends. What we basically call Kiddush and Havdalah. That's part of the biblical mitzvah of Zachar Esyem HaShabbos L'Katshei. You have to remember the day of Shabbos to sanctify it. Shamar Esyem HaShabbos means keep Shabbos, means don't do any work on Shabbos. Shamar means don't do work on Shabbos. Zachar means make Kiddush on Shabbos. They bring down from the Dubna Magid. He said, what's the difference? Because there's the Torah is talking to two different types of people. You can have a rich person that for him to have beautiful food on Shabbos is no big deal. He has a lot of money. What's the big deal? For him, the difficulty of Shabbos is not working. He has big businesses. You know, for him not to work on Shabbos, that's the hard part. So for the rich man, the Torah says, Shamar Esyem HaShabbos L'Katshei. You might be rich, and you might, you know, honoring Shabbos is no big deal for you. You have beautiful food. But to remember Shabbos, not to do work, that's for him. Then you have a poor person. He doesn't have a problem with not working on Shabbos, because he doesn't work a whole week. He has no money, he's poor, he doesn't have a job. What's the difficulty for him on Shabbos? To put beautiful food on the table. That's his difficulty. For that poor person, the Torah says, Zachar Esyem HaShabbos. So you need both, so to speak. Zachar is for the poor person, and Shamar is for the rich person. That's how the Dubna Magid explained it. But the Gemara learned out from the fact that the Torah says Zachar and Shamar, a very interesting halacha. But before we go into that, let me just explain the halacha a little bit. There is biblical Kiddush, and there is rabbinic Kiddush. Now, when the Torah says, remember the day of Shabbos to sanctify it, meaning, when Shabbos comes, you have to show Shabbos is holier than the previous week, than the previous days. When Shabbos ends, you want to show that Shabbos is holier than the upcoming day. So we make Havdalah. So when Shabbos starts, we say, Baruch Ata Hashem Mekadesh HaShabbos. And by Havdalah, we say, Hamavdo Ben Kodesh L'chol. But biblically, there is no mitzvah to do it over a cup of wine. The Torah says, remember Shabbos, verbally. You say, Baruch Ata Hashem Mekadesh HaShabbos. You say, Mizmor Shil Yema Shabbos. You say, Baruch Hamavdo Ben Kodesh L'chol. Or Atoch HaNantanu. You did the biblical mitzvah of Kiddush and Havdalah. You sanctified Shabbos. The Chachamim came along and said, in addition to doing it verbally, we also want you to do it over a cup of wine. So therefore we have the concept of Kiddush and the concept of Havdalah. Parenthetically, just to explain, so why do we make Kiddush Shabbos morning? After davening, you also make Kiddush. The mitzvah of Kiddush, according to the Torah, is when Shabbos starts and when Shabbos ends. So why do you make a Kiddush in the middle of the day? It's like, what are you sanctifying? You're not sanctifying, you're already in the middle of the Kiddush. So over there is a different reason. If you notice, the day Kiddush is not a Kiddush. It's just Beri Pri Hagafen. Friday night...
Actually, there's more to say...
Okay, but those are just Psukim. You're right, but those are Psukim, it's not a Bracha. Friday night... You make Yom HaShishi, but that's, again, just a paragraph. But then you have the Baruch HaTosh, Beri Pri Hagafen, and then you have HaShem Kedshanu B'mitzvah, V'Ratzabonu Baruch HaTosh Hashem Mekadesh HaShabbos. But Havdalah, you also have Hamavdol Ben Kodesh L'chol, Baruch HaTosh Hashem, Hamavdol Ben Kodesh L'chol. So, Friday night and Shabbos night is the real mitzvah of Kiddush and Havdalah, because over there, when Shabbos starts and when Shabbos ends. During the day, it's just a bracha Beri Pri Hagafen. There's no additional Kiddush bracha. So why do we make Kiddush Shabbos day? So the halacha is, halacha explains as follows. There's a Friday night meal, and there's a Shabbos day meal. Halachically, the Shabbos day meal is more important than the Friday night meal. Halachically, the Shabbos day meal is more important than the Friday night meal. Therefore, halacha says, what happens if you have a good food? When should you use it? Friday night or Shabbos day? So halacha says you're supposed to use it Shabbos day. Why? Because that's the main meal. So halacha says, Friday night meal, you have Kiddush. Shabbos day meal, which is more important, you're not going to have Kiddush. It doesn't look nice. So we make a Kiddush Shabbos day also. But what's the Kiddush? Just Beri Pri Hagafen. That's parenthetical. So you have the concept of Kiddush in verbal.
Why the food is
that's biblical. Huh? Because the Gemara learns out from various different ways that the day meal is more honorable. It's supposed to be honored more than the Friday night meal. So 1 second. So you have the verbal Kiddush, which is biblical, and then you have a cup of wine, which is the rabbinic Kiddush. So now the question is, are women obligated in Kiddush? In this mitzvah of Zochas, Yom HaShabbos HaKatshei, are women obligated or not? L'cha'eda, they shouldn't be obligated in the mitzvah. Why? Because any positive mitzvah connected to time, women are not obligated in. This is connected to Shabbos, it's connected to a specific time. So l'cha'eda, women should not be obligated in the mitzvah of Kiddush. But the Gemara says, no, they are. Why are they? Because Shamar is Yom HaShabbos HaKatshei. Shamar means... don't do work. That's a negative commandment. Women are obligated in all the negative commandments, even negative commandments connected to time. Right. So therefore, the Gemara learns out, that if they're obligated in Shamar, and Hashem said Zachar and Shamar simultaneously, so the Gemara learns out, whoever has to keep Shamar, has to keep Zachar. And therefore, halachically, women are obligated in Kiddush and Havdalah. We find a similar thing to Pesach. And Pesach, it says, we all know in practical halach, women have to eat matzah. The question, why do women have to eat matzah? L'cha'eda, it's a mitzvah connected to time. Why is it different than lulav that they don't have to do? Why is it different than sukkah that they don't have to do? Why do they have to eat matzah? It's a mitzvah connected to time. So again, the Gemara learns out a similar concept. In one pasuk it says, eat matzah, don't eat chametz. So the Gemara learns out the fact that the Torah puts both together in the same pasuk. eat matzah, don't eat chametz. So we learn out, whoever is obligated in not eating chametz, which women are obligated in because it's a negative commandment, so then they're obligated in the positive mitzvah of eating matzah. What?
I ate...
Okay, bekitzer.
No, I never told you this.
So make it faster.
I ate Kanei Nahara in my life in a lot of Jewish homes.
Good.
Friday night and Shabbos right after Musa. Okay?
No.
And the meals were exactly the same.
They didn't have cholent Friday night.
They didn't have what?
Cholent.
Cholent.
We didn't have cholent Saturday either. We had soup and chicken and gefilte fish.
Okay, that's good.
And challah.
Okay. Now the Gemara says, "Okay, right." The Gemara says,
"Wait a minute, Rabbi."
The Gemara,
you said that the Shabbos afternoon meal is more important than the Friday night.
Yeah, because you're supposed to have cholent, you didn't. Now,
I never heard
the Gemara that. Tells a story. In
no
fact,
Rabbi ever said that.
I did. So now the Gemara tells a story in Shabbos when Rabbi Yeshiva Yochai. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, why are you closing the door?
Oh, come on,
it's hot.
Change your seat.
Put on a talis. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, when he left the cave, you know, after he was hiding in the cave, so he came out of the cave, and he saw. First he was upset that people were working and he destroyed the world and he went back into the cave. The Gemara says the whole story, the Lag BaOmer story. But then the Gemara says that Rashbi finally came out of the cave with the sun after 13 years. So he saw a Jew running in the street, Erev Shabbos, holding two bundles of myrtle trees. Mm-hmm. So he said, "Where are you running with these flowers?" He said, "This is for the honor of Shabbos." He said, "But why two? Why can't you have one?" So the Jew answered, "One for Zachar and one for Shamar." So the Rabbi Shimon Yochai heard this, he turned to his son and he said, "Look how great the Jews are. The way they honor Shabbos to such an extent." Because Rabbi Lazar was complaining, "Look, the Jews are working, they're not learning Torah." He said, look how precious every commandment is to the Jewish people, that they even come home with two things of flowers because Zachar and Shamar. Now, the Medrash also says, when it comes, so therefore, Zohar Siyam HaShabbos Zekatshe is the concept of making Kiddush. Shomer Siyam HaShabbos Zekatshe is the concept of not doing work. Okay? And they're both connected. The Mechilta says, the Medrash says the following. Shabbos came, after Hashem created the world, you know, 7 days. Shabbos came with a complaint to God. Every day has a partner except me. Sunday has Monday, Tuesday has Wednesday, Thursday has Friday. And I'm the oddball. I'm the odd number, Shabbos. They complain, I don't have a partner. So the Medrash says, Hashem said, "Don't worry, I'm your partner." So Hashem said to Shabbos, "I'm your partner." And therefore it says, if you want to experience Olam Haba, you know, if you want to, you have to keep Shabbos. Another thing it says, that Hashem said to the Jewish people, the Jews are, to Shabbos, I mean, when he complained, he said, the Jews are your mate. The Jews are your partner. Now, that's why it says, by the way, the Medrash learns that Zachar Siyam HaShabbos LeKatshei. Katshei means to sanctify it, but LeKatshei comes with the word Kedushin, which is marriage. Shabbos is the concept, so to speak, of the marriage between betrothed to one another, and they're betrothed to Hashem. Because that's the whole concept of Shabbos. Chazal tell us, Shabbos is what's called Yesod HaEmuna. Shabbos is the fundamental concept of Jewish belief. The Gemara says, a person who openly, publicly desecrates Shabbos has a din like a goy, because they're basically denying the entire foundation of belief that God created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh. So therefore, this is the whole concept of Zachar Siyam HaShabbos HaKatshei, to sanctify the day of Shabbos and make sure that the Shabbos is holy, both by eating, by making Kiddush, and so on and so forth. Yeah. One second. Yeah. No.
How come here that it says Zachor, and you said that Bet Hanan says Shamor, but then you mentioned that the Lechadol says Shamor with Zachor? How come here doesn't say Shamor v'Zachor at the same time?
No. Here it says Zachor. In the one in the Devarim it says only Shamor.
Right. Why does it make Shamor v'Zachor together?
Because one...
To make it two separate things.
Two separate things. Okay, yeah, I was going to wait a little bit. I'll explain now already. I mentioned before that the Klei Yakar asks the question, why is it that there's so many differences between this one and the one in Vayeschanan? And he says a whole bunch of difference. One place it says, Shesh Yam Tavev Asis Komalach Techa, and, 1 second. Here he says as follows. In the first one it says Zachar, the second one it says Shamar. The first one, it doesn't say that God commanded you, and by Shabbos and Kibbutz Avim it says that God commanded. Here in the first place it says that why do you have to keep Shabbos? Because God created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh. In the second Ten Commandments, in Vayeschanan, it just says because remember that you were a servant in Egypt. It doesn't say anything that God created the world in 6 days. First one it says you should live long, the second one just says it'll be good for you. There's so many differences between the first and the second. So the Klei Yakar explains, he says, the commentators discuss this, but there's no one answer that answers all the questions. That's what the Klei Yakar says. He says, he brings out the point as follows. We know the famous Medrash that says that God, before he gave the Torah, went to all nations of the world to offer them the Torah. Because he didn't want that the nations would come along later and say, hey God, you know, you didn't offer us the Torah, you offered it to the Jews. If you offered it to us, we would also accept it, we would also be great, you know. So what did Hashem do? He offered the Torah to all the nations of the world. He came to Yishmael, to the major nations at the time, the Arabs, and God said, you want the Torah? So the Arabs said, what does it say in the Torah? What does it say in the Torah? So Hashem said, it says don't steal. He said, you kidding? We make a living by stealing. He went to Esav. Hashem said, you want the Torah? Esav said, what do you want? What does it say in the Torah? It says, don't kill. So they said, you kidding? Yitzchok, Achar b'chotichi, you should live by your sword. Esav, worse with a sword. He went to all the nations of the world. Then he came to the Jews. This is not what the Medrash says, by the way. He came to the Jews. The Jews asked, how much does it cost? God said, for free. He said, give us two. So God gave him the two tablets because it was for free. But he says, the Klei Yakar explains.
That's a racist joke.
I didn't say any race, you know. It's anti-Jewish. Okay, one second. So he explains, he says as follows. That God went to all the nations of the world. And he says, the difference is as follows. When Hashem said the first of the Ten Commandments, these Ten Commandments, he was speaking to all the nations of the world at the same time. And he can't say to them, Shamar Asyema Shabbos, not to do work, because the din is, a guy is not allowed to keep Shabbos. If a guy keeps Shabbos, he gets killed. A guy is forbidden to keep Shabbos. So Hashem couldn't have said in the first one of the commandments, Shamar Esyema Shabbos, don't work on Shabbos, because that doesn't apply to the goyim. What did God say to them? Zohar, remember the Shabbos. That the goy would be able to do. And he says as follows. He gives an example. When Yitzchak commanded Yaakov not to take girls from Canaan, so what did Esav do? He saw that the girls of Canaan are bad in the eyes of his father. He went and took machlas. That means on their own they wouldn't do it, but they would copycat the Jews. But the Jews, the guy can't copycat a Jew, and it's something that he's forbidden to do. God couldn't allow him to do it. So therefore, there were two distinct commandments. Now, obviously, God said it once in this parasha. Over there, Moshe Rabbeinu is repeating what God said. But why did Moshe Rabbeinu change the texts in a number of places? Because there were taka two levels of the Ten Commandments. There's a level of the Ten Commandments in this parsha. There's a level of the Ten Commandments in Vayeschanan. There's another difference, by the way, similar to the difference between Shavuos and Yom Kippur. At Shavuos, we got the first set of luchos, the first tablets, And Yom Kippur, we got the second tablets. What's the difference between the first tablets and the second tablets? Okay, the first one's broke, but still, what's the difference conceptually between the first and the second set of tablets? The first tablets, the first Ten Commandments, the Jews were on the level of tzaddikim. They came out of Egypt, newborn babies, mamish tzaddikim. The second set of luchas was after they sinned in the golden calf. Then they did tshuva. God and Yom Kippur forgave the Jewish people. So the second set of luchas, the second tablets that we got, the Jews were on a higher level, the level of a bal tshuva. The first luchas were given with a big commotion. You know, thunder and lightning and the whole world was silent and everything. What happens when you do things with a big commotion? They break. Second set of luchas were given quietly, Moshe Rabbeinu and Har Sinai privately, private party. That lasted for everything. That was permanent. But there's a fundamental difference between the first luchas and the second luchas as far as the concept of tzaddikim versus bali tshuva. And bali tshuva are greater than tzaddikim. And that explains again, just again parenthetically, Simchas Torah, we finished the Torah and we started again. Yeah, L'cha'ede, it would make more sense to do it on Shavuos. Yes. Shavuos, we got the Torah. We received the Torah on Shavuos. So it makes sense. We should start Bereishis on Shavuos and make Simchas Torah on Shavuos. You know, and it would make more sense. Why is doing it Simchas Torah? I mean, what does it have to do with Simchas Torah? The answer is because Simchas Torah corresponds with the second luchas that were given on Yom Kippur. And Hashem says the real simcha of Torah is what's on a level of a bal tshuva, which is greater than a tzaddik. And it's brought down in Tzvarim that the difference between the first Ten Commandments and the second Ten Commandments is also a difference between the level of tzaddikim versus the level of bali tshuva.
But the first one were...
What?
Me?
Your wife's giving you respect.
When it says that Hashem asked the other nations.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just like naive, but it seems not to make sense. Because who did he ask? I mean, he asked one leader, or I mean, how does he ask the nation?
You mean the practical technicality of it?
How he asked? Who he asked?
The Paul.
I don't understand that.
I've never seen anywhere that exactly says who did God ask. I would imagine he asked the angel which is in charge of that nation. Like the Sad of Esav, the Sad of Yishmael. That's what I imagine. But again, I didn't see it anywhere, at least what I remember.
Because I've heard that repeated, and I just started thinking.
Yeah, I mean, did he go to every Tom, Dick, and Harry? Or?
I mean, like, maybe there was somebody who would like it. I mean, it's not like everyone in those nations were only...
But he asked, probably, I imagine, that he has to ask one thing. So he asked the angel that's in charge of that nation. So that angel said, no, we're not interested.
Yeah. But Hashem asked them, I mean, they asked Hashem what is inside. And said, one said not to steal and one said not to...
Kill.
To kill. But these two mitzvahs they already had from Noah.
It's a good question. They had anyway. That's the key.
They weren't keeping those either.
I'm going to rephrase your question. Forget the Goyim. Every one of the Ten Commandments the Jews had before. The Ten Commandments, the big tumult, commotion, thunder, lightning, nobody's allowed to go on the mountain and God is coming down in Har Sinai, and the whole tararam, right? The whole commotion. What did God say? Every one of the mitzvahs of the Ten Commandments, the Jews were obligated before. Not idolatry, adultery, murder. That they had the seven night laws, right? The obligation of Zochras Yom HaShabbos Zekachay, they were given in Mara, before the Ten Commandments. Okay? Kabbat Esavicha Vesimecha, we find even Esav honored Yitzchak. Okay? Kabbat Esavicha Vesimecha was an honoring father and mother, was a logical thing everybody did. Even Avram with Terech, Rashi says that he had Kibbut Avayim. So if you think about it, every one of the Ten Commandments the Jews had before. So now God comes along with this whippity-doo-da, wow, you know, I'm giving you now the Torah, Ten Commandments. Ta-ra-ra-ra-ra. What is he giving them? Don't steal, good morning. Don't kill, good morning. Believe in God, good morning. Not to have any other gods, good morning. Honor your father and mother, don't covet, don't know. What's the big deal? I would make a different top ten. If I would be God, if I would make all the illogical mitzvahs of the Torah. I would say, first one of the Ten Commandments, red heifer. Doesn't make sense at all. Paradum. Number two, don't eat meat and milk. Milk is kosher, meat is kosher. Put it together, it becomes treif. Doesn't make sense. Third one, don't wear shatnez. Don't wear shatnez. Wool and linen together. Wool is kosher, linen is kosher to wear. You can't put them together. Next one I would pick, maybe don't eat chazer, which also doesn't make sense. I mean, to go through, it would make sense to pick things that are shocking at least. You know, something worth the commotion. Right. Why in the world is God giving the Ten Commandments with such simple, logical mitzvah that they ought to do, and all of a sudden God is making such a commotion about it? This is exactly what Torah is all about. What does it mean? Excuse me, just can't expand my feet. It means as follows. The uniqueness of the Ten Commandments is when God says now at the Ten Commandments, don't steal. God is saying, now you don't steal because I said don't steal. Not because it's morally wrong to steal. There's a very big difference. You keep Shabbos because I said keep Shabbos, not because it's logical. Don't steal, don't kill, don't commit adultery, don't whatever it is. Believe in God. God says, you know what? Now that I'm giving you the Ten Commandments, I want you to understand something. Now you're not going to steal because I said so, not because it's morally wrong to steal. And there's a fundamental difference in that. And dafka, in the logical mitzvahs of Torah, is where the matan Torah accomplished, the uniqueness of the receiving of the Torah accomplished, that over there God says, this I want you to do because I said so. Shabbos, keeping Shabbos, basically, except what Shabbos, kosher. Of course I'm only doing it because God did. There's no logical reason to keep kosher. So of course I'm doing it to because God said so. But the Torah is coming along and saying, I want you to keep the logical mitzvahs because I said so, not because they're logical. And there's a lot of differences in this. If a person doesn't steal because it's morally wrong to steal, let's say. If a person does it because it's morally wrong to steal, in many instances, the person will justify stealing. Yes. We gave many times a classic example of Robin Hood. Robin Hood stole from the rich and gave to the poor. In secular books, he's a hero. In Torah, he's a ganef. He's a thief. He's not allowed to do it. If somebody doesn't steal, I'll give you another example. Morally, I would think, if I come into your office, and I see a pen on the table, and I need to sign my name, so I'm going to take your pen and sign my name. Yeah? Is there anything wrong with that? Of course not.
Yes.
Yeah, according to Torah, you're a ganef. But morally, logically, there's nothing wrong. Come on, what did I take already? What did I do? I didn't do anything. The difference is...
Just using the pen you're talking about?
Yeah.
Then ask if you can use the ink.
I'm not saying taking it home.
Just using the pen?
Yeah.
I do it every day. I must be a beginner.
Halachically, they say to justify that, you know, the guy doesn't mind. But the truth of the matter is, if you borrow something without permission, you're a gun. If that's even borrowing here, when you're using the ink, it's even worse because you're actually using ink. Using up ink, maybe a drop, but so what? But you're still stealing. But the point is that the person understands that my logic, I'm not doing it because it's logical, because then the mitzvah can only go as far as my logic goes. Where my logic ends, which is limited, It can never reach the infinite. Because I'm keeping it because my logic understands this is the way to go. But my seichel, my brain is limited. So it can only reach a limited level. If a person doesn't steal because God said don't steal, then by not stealing you reach the infinite because you're reaching God, not because your logic says it's wrong to steal.
Rabbi, when is the time that the Jews accepted Torah with the mountains of the head? Is the second time or the first?
First time.
First time. So the second time they did it willingly. How does that coordinate with the
poor? The Jews got the Ten Commandments once.
Right.
Okay, Moshe Rabbeinu repeated it later with different texts. But God said the Ten Commandments once in Shavuos.
That's the time they did not penetrate him, so to speak.
Correct.
So the second time they were about...
It was after Yom Kippur, not the second. Again, God gave the Ten Commandments once.
Right.
He said the Ten Commandments, Mount Sinai was only once. But the Luchis, he got the second time.
Can we say that in the beginning, that if the Jews did not steal because it wasn't documented, and Shavuot it became documented, so they were responsible for what they did?
Now they did it because God said don't steal. There's a whole different story.
But in the beginning God said don't steal also.
Yeah, but it's not the same revelation of God coming down into the physical world and connecting the physical world to godliness. To godliness. That's what the Matan Torah accomplished. Listen, Avram learned Torah, Yitzchak learned Torah, Yaakov learned Torah, Noach learned Torah, Adam learned Torah. In Mitzrayim they learned Torah. Yaakov sent Yehuda to open a yeshiva. Right?
Did they keep Shabbat in Egypt?
Some did, some didn't. But they weren't commanded then in Mara. Okay? Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov kept the whole Torah before it was given. The rest of the gang, the Shvatim, it's questionable if they kept the Torah or not. One opinion says yes, some say yes, some say no. But Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov kept Shabbos. Okay? Now, but, so the question is, what did Matan Torah accomplish if they had the Torah before? The Medrash says, Me'elam le'paski yeshiva me'avisein. From the time of Avraham Avinu, the Jews learned Torah. There was a yeshiva Mitzrayim that Yaakov opened. Yehuda opened. Levi was the Rosh Yeshiva of the yeshiva Mitzrayim. So what did the Matan Torah accomplish? So the explanation is, Matan Torah accomplished that the physical world became holy. Before Matan Torah, the physical world cannot become holy. So before that, even when God said don't steal, it wasn't that you became holy by not stealing, or when you did something positive, you made the world holy. Matan Torah accomplished that God broke the barrier between spiritual and physical. Then physical is able to become spiritual. Spiritual could become physical. You can mix them two together. That's what Matan Torah accomplished. So even though it was revealed in simple things that they were all obligated to do before, and they knew about it before, but it didn't have the sanctity that this is God's Torah. It was basically a moral right and wrong. It wasn't a godly right and wrong.
How did Purim affect them then? Purim time.
Purim, they re-willingly accepted the Torah. Right.
But yeah. Why the second time the Torah was not written with the finger of God inspired? It was holier.
It wasn't holier.
Well, we made tshuva and then we were considered like above tzaddikim.
The Jews made tshuva, but the luchos, the first ones were written by God Himself. The second one, Moshe Rabbeinu wrote, and it's obvious the first one's greater.
So, like, it's not doesn't go with the fact that we are on a higher level the second time. It doesn't have to go together.
When a Baal Tshuva is greater than a tzaddik, in certain aspects, a tzaddik is still greater than a Baal Tshuva.
Okay.
But now, what does it mean?
Mm-hmm.
Where is Yerushalayim geographically? No. I mean, in which tribe?
Binyamin.
Okay. The base of Migdash, now Yerushalayim is, lahavdil billions of avdolos, Washington D.C. is in a certain state.
Right.
But it's not actually part of the state. But geographically it's in a certain state, in Virginia, right? Or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yerushalayim, geographically, is in Binyamin. Yerushalayim, Ir Shechubro Leyachtov, Yerushalayim belonged to all the Shvatim. So it says, and especially Chassidus explains, why did God chose the Beis HaMikdash to be geographically in Binyamin. And not in Yehuda, in Reuven, in Shimon. I mean, what, you know, Levi didn't own them, but the other places. So explanation is very interesting. Binyamin was the only one of the tribes that didn't sell Yosef as a slave. All the other tribes were basically Bali Tshuva. They repented what they did. You know, when they came to Mitzrayim, Aval Hashem and Manachnu, we sinned, we did wrong. Binyamin was never involved in the sin to begin with. So, in fact, that's one of the reasons why Binyamin is called Binyamin HaTzadik, one of the many reasons, because he would not have no part in the sin. So Hashem said, my dwelling place will be in the tzaddik level, because as far as revealing godliness, I want to be in a place that was always pure. Yeah, there's an advantage of a Baal Tshuva who was, so to speak, impure and became pure, from darkness transformed to light, from evil transformed to good, there's an advantage to it. But yet, in certain respects, there's an advantage of somebody always being pure. As far as the revelation of godliness, we see from the Beis HaMikdash, the revelation of godliness is more revealed in the tzaddik level than in the Baal Tshuva level, even though the Baal Tshuva level might be greater. And that's why the luchis that God wrote when the Jews were on the level of tzaddikim, with the writing of God, contrary to the second luchis that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote. But there's an advantage in each one. What's more unique about Tshuva is more unique than a tzaddik, because he changed his ways. Right? Mm-hmm. But still there's an advantage of a tzaddik that he never sinned. Yeah, one second. What?
Question, it's a little bit off topic, but...
Well, I'm used to that in this class. Well, I'll tell you the truth, in this shul.
In the shul.
Yeah, but in my younger days...
On the east side?
You became Kurds?
No.
How long did it take God to give the Torah after the world was created?
2,448 years.
Okay. What was the purpose of God waiting that long? Like, why couldn't after like the first Shabbat, like the eighth day or something, God give the Torah?
Adam sinned.
What did he do with the first one?
In fact, it was supposed to be, we say in davening every day from Tillim, Dover Tziva Le'elav Der. God should have given it 1,000 generations, not after 26 generations. But God needed really a Dover Tziva Le'elav Der. But God, the Gemara says, hastened it up a little bit to give it after 26 generations. Why did God give the Torah when he did and not earlier? Because there had to be a process of the Jews becoming a nation and going through the process of Egypt, and everything was a process. In order for the Jews to receive the Torah, they had to be slaves in Egypt. In order for the Jews to be slaves in Egypt, there had to be a process of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and the whole system.
What would happen if you didn't have that process? Everything was just hunky-dory and peachy-peachy right off the bat.
Then life would be boring. Number one, oh yes, there's no excitement in life when everything just goes fine. Number one. Number two, trust me, I'm older than you, I know. Secondly, there has to be ups and downs. Like we said, there's a process. God created a perfect world, Adam and Eve sinned. Then they became higher than before. Then there had to be a lower than a higher, the lower and a higher, lower and a higher. It had to be keep going up and down until finally they came to reach the level of Matan Torah. And right after Matan Torah was a big downer again with the golden calf. And then they came to Yom Kippur, which is even a higher level. Then you have a Mishkan, then you have that destroyed, Beis HaMikdash destroyed, second Beis HaMikdash destroyed. You know, we're all in the whole, it's a roller coaster. But that's the there's a definite process. Now, could God could do whatever he wants. Could Hashem have given the Torah the first day Adam and Eve was born? Of course he could. He could have done whatever he wanted. But there's a process. There's a process of why Hashem gave the Torah when he did, how he did, where he did, and you know, so on and so forth. I'll give you an example. The Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, the fifth Perek, the fifth chapter, Pirkei Avos, begins, Basarim Aymaris Nivra Ha'ilam. The world was created with 10 utterances, and then the Mishnah says, V'alei B'mayim Erachad Yochali Baris. God could have created the world with one utterance. If God did it with 10, he could have done it with one, right? So that's just us, that, you know, destroy the world, whatever. So the Rebbe explained, the Mishnah's question is not, why did God create the world with 10 instead of 1? I'll give you an example. God created the world, the sun, 93 million miles away from Earth, yeah? Mm-hmm. Approximately. Why didn't God create it 94 million miles away? The Earth has a certain diameter, yeah? X amount of thousands of miles, yeah? Why did God create the Earth with that amount of diameter? Why not 1 mile less or 1 mile more? That question is an unaskable question. God had to do it. He had to do it some way. So this is the way he did it. But the Mishnah's question is not why God created the world with 10 utterances. The Mishnah's question is Ma Talmud Leimad. What does it teach us from the fact that God created? Not why God created it in 10 utterances. Why God gave the 10 to year 2448, not the year 2447. You can't ask that. The question is, the fact that we know God did it this way, what does it teach me from the way God did it, but not why God did it. Right. You can't ask why God made 9, 10 planets. You keep finding out new ones. Why God made 10 planets and not 50 planets. You can't ask that question. Whatever he made, he made. The question is, if we know about it, what does it teach me? Because obviously, if I know about it, there's something I have to learn from it. There is an explanation. There needed to be 26 generations. There had to be a concept of Avram. There had to be a concept of Noach. There had to be a concept of Adam and everybody in between. There had to be 7 generations until Moshe. There had to be Golus Mitzrayim. And there was a process. Everything had to take place for Torah to be given. And after the process was done, then Torah was able and ready to be given. And for the first 26 generations that God created the world existed from total kindness of God. Because there was no mitzvahs going on. And even the others who did mitzvahs, they had no impact on the world. It was all spiritual, like the Rambam says. Reichus Hayu, there were spiritual mitzvahs. It didn't affect the world in any way whatsoever. So therefore, what?
You have to have it inside of you to get to the point where you accept God and the mitzvah. Like, if Abraham didn't feel it inside of him and he left and meditate, like I'm talking about morality versus commandments. You have to first get to the point where you have what you call derech eretz, which you need to feel it inside you, and then probably to find it in the books.
Not necessarily.
Well, otherwise, Abraham...
Should a Jew wait to put on tefillin until they feel it?
No, it's not about feeling it.
Or should they put on tefillin right away even if you don't feel it?
Jews do good things and they are not religious and they don't put tefillin because they feel that it's the truth.
We're not done at the Ten Commandments. I'm not getting into it today.
Okay.
Because we went off enough today. But when we get further on in the Ten Commandments, we're going to learn that the first 5 are between man and God. And the second 5 are between man to man.
Man, yeah.
You know why it has to be, and I'm just going to say the point now and you can sleep on it. You know why there has to be 5 and 5? Because contrary to public belief, what the Torah teaches us in Ten Commandments is an unbelievable concept. Mm-hmm. You cannot be good between man and God if you're not good between man and man. And you cannot be good, contrary to public belief, you cannot be good between man to man if you're not good between man and God.
Okay.
They complement each other and make each other. Meaning, you can't come along and say, I am a good person between man to man without being a religious person. It's an incorrect statement and it can't be. 1 minute. And I'm not going to explain now. Next week, Mr. Shum will explain why. It can't be. You cannot be a real, ultimate, not what you think. You cannot be a real good person between man to man if you're not good between man and God. And equally, you cannot be good between man and God if you're not good between man and man.
But what I'm saying is that it seals it. The commandment seals something that starts within the person, because if the person just does the commandment without having also touched the truth within them, within himself, he's going to do it robotically. So what's the difference between us and German people who you give them commandment and they do it? Because the process, like we see it in history, should be also done individually. Like a lot of
you're proving my point by saying the Germans.
Sorry?
You're proving my point by saying the Germans. A person has to... Okay, let's rephrase your question. I'm going to rephrase your question. You go to the doctor. The doctor prescribes a medicine. Mm-hmm. Okay? You're very sick. Not you. A person's very sick. They go to the doctor. The doctor prescribes a medicine. Now, the patient's intellectual. He's not a fool. He's a smart person. He's going to say to the doctor, hey, hold your horses. You expect me to take this medicine that I don't know how it works? No, I'm not taking the medicine until I figure out how it works. And after I know how it works, then I will agree to take it. What am I, a stupid fool? Going to just have blind faith? There's no way. I'm an intellectual. Now, obviously, if the patient has that attitude, they're going to die before they ever find out. Because the doctor, if he had any brains, would tell the patient, you fool. You want to know, I went to medical school for X amount of years, and my knowledge is based on research for the past 5,000 years, right? You expect to figure out everything in 10 minutes before you take the pill. So what's the answer? The answer is, the patient, if they're normal, trusts the doctor, because it's the doctor's knowledge and the previous doctor's knowledge and the previous generation. One second. And they take the medication based on the research for thousands of years. When it comes to Yiddishkeit, you have the same thing. A guy will come along and say, until I understand Shabbos, until I understand Tefillin, until I understand kosher, I'm not going to do it. That's a fool. Why? Because you're talking about thousands of years of learning and discussion and understanding and reasoning. You can't expect that in 10 minutes you're going to understand what took thousands of years to learn. You have to trust, just like you trust a doctor, which is a human being, you might as well trust God, who wrote the Torah, to go. And I mentioned the other day Shabbos, an interesting point, which I heard from somebody else, obviously, because I don't make up these things myself. I heard an interesting point. When you ask somebody in the street to put on tefillin, and they answer you, I want to think about it. You know, many times, you know, I want to think about it. They're not thinking about it. They made a positive decision not to do it. They're not thinking. They made a positive decision right now that they're not doing it. That can't be. When it comes to religion, you have to have the faith and belief in the process of Torah that went from the time God gave the Torah in Har Sinai, and it's the same Torah.
Can I give you an answer?
Yeah.
For your doctor, first of all, a lot of people can do research before they double anything they have to give, and they should. Because a lot of doctors prescribe things they don't know themselves that they're true.
But you know how long it's going to take them to do it?
It doesn't matter. It can take, today it takes 1 second to do website.
Well, that's not a good doctor.
That's not a good doctor.
You don't go to him. You go to a good doctor.
No, she's not the doctor. The patient in 1 minute could learn the whole medical history.
No, not learn the medical. He can make a research about medication, about many medication that probably will kill him no matter what, because a lot of medication do kill.
Oh, here
and
goes.
Second, yes, intellectually you have to do some research.
She doesn't take medicine.
No. Second, how do you get people to
tshuva?
Don't you think they have a whole process of tshuva?
Sometimes, one thing. Sometimes.
That's what Bali tshuva are.
No, the truth is that's not true. The Rebbe's shita in Kiruv, we mentioned this many times. The Rebbe's philosophy in Kiruv, when you meet a guy in the street, the first thing you do with them is a mitzvah. Why? Because that mitzvah connects them. They become connected. If you start talking to them, okay, you know, go to this organization, they'll talk to you about who knows what under the sun, and they'll never ask you to put on tefillin, but they'll talk to you about it. In 6 months, they'll say, hey, maybe you want to put on tefillin. So first of all, for 6 months, he didn't put on tefillin, which is the mitzvah that connects them. You have to be connected. So you can't wait until you feel a mitzvah and then do it. A reason why a person becomes Baal Tshuva is because the neshama is yearning. The neshama is yearning, not the person. The neshama of the person is yearning to go return home. Okay? And therefore that yearning is causing the person to long and to try to research and try to find and to know what's going on. Anyway, to be continued, the Chassidus shiur right now. Part 2. Should I?